Just saying that it's nostalgic to come and speak here and start your day in London. Just very briefly before I start, about almost, I think it's probably about 20 years ago, Menachem David Zaltzman asked to have a meeting about it. It actually started in my house, the first meeting, and we had a meeting with Rav Moshe Kupitz, Zichron Livracha, Yossi Chazan, and myself. And we sat around the table and he launched this idea of start your day the Torah way. And the idea was that each of us should give it twice a week. I took Thursday, Friday. I remember then discussing, is it going to work? And I was very skeptical about the idea. And standing here almost 20 years later, and sometimes speaking in Manchester still, and in other places in Europe, and if you think about all the thousands of hours, or tens of thousands that have been learnt as a result of his launching this program, I was just thinking much before that, you know, in life, we don't like to go out of a comfort zone. And he launched a program, he wasn't sure if it would work or not. We're so afraid of failure, we often give up on good ideas and lose out on tremendous schusim that we can achieve. And even if we do fail, that shouldn't deter us from trying anything else. If you're allowed to mention Churchill here in the Beis Medrash, he said once a very good line, success is going from failure to failure without losing enthusiasm. And that is such an important line in life. Don't get deterred by failure, by the possibility of failure. And even if we do fail, we can try again. The deterrent of the fear of failure can stop a person from accomplishing what they can accomplish in life. And that is really something to learn from, standing here 20 years later and giving a shiur to start your day, and thinking back to that first meeting when I thought, it's not going to work, how long will it last for? And it didn't just last for so long, it's spread to other communities as well. Oh, yeah. I want to speak about a nekuda, which maybe we think about sometimes. We're shomrei Torah mitzvahs, so maybe this is something we often think about. This parsha, Mishpatim, the parsha of Yisroel, or the Mishpatim of the parshas of Matan Torah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu at Matan Torah introduced himself to Klal Yisroel. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the first introduction of HaKadosh Baruch Hu was, Asher Yitzicho Me'etz Yisroel, I took you out of Yisroel. A very simple question. You'd expect HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when he introduces himself to Klal Yisrael, he would say, I am HaKadosh Baruch Hu who created heaven and earth. I created you. Maybe the purpose why I created you. Why is the Hakdama, the first opening sentence of Matan Torah, Asher Yitzicho Me'etz Mitzrayim, I've taken you out of Mitzrayim. Why is that the opening sentence, the Hakdama of Matan Torah? Why is it so important? I once heard from Rabbi Ron Gurvich, he said it over in the name of someone called Shmuel Bendict Feivelson. He said the marshal, there's once a villager who went to a big city, never seen a city in his life, and his host took him round to show him the sights of the city. He took him past a big imposing building. There were guards standing around the building with guns drawn, fully equipped. He asked, what's this building? His host said, it's a prison. Ah, never seen a prison in his life. Went a bit further, saw another also imposing building, which had one similarity. There was a guard standing round it, with guns drawn, fully armed. He asked, is this another prison? So his host said to him, no, this is a palace, the king's palace. He's a bit confused. The palace and the prison both have similar characteristics, armed guards standing round it. His host explained to him, the prison, the armed guards are to keep the people in. The palace, the armed guards are to keep the people out. So he said a very important yesod. Torah can be looked at in two ways. We can look at it as being restrictive, or we can view it correctly as being protective. The Hakdama of Matan Torah was Asher Yitzicho Me'etz Mitzrayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling Klal Yisrael, I took you out of Mitzrayim, I freed you. And Torah is about freedom. It's protecting us from society, and it gives us true freedom. Ein lecha ben chayrim, ela mi Shaisik, so much like more. Ain't no chum in chayin, enemy shaisik with Torah. A person who's oisik in Torah, learns Torah, and keeps Torah, he is the real free person. He's free. But sometimes, we might look at Torah as being restrictive. I'll give you a moshel, our shidduch process, the way we separate men from women. We might sometimes feel that our life is more restrictive, but the goyim, it's so open-minded, there's mingling, there's no restrictions, no boundaries. The reality is, we think a little bit deeper into it, we'll understand it's not restrictive. It's so protective and so much better. But the goyim, as they call it, is love at first sight. It's all about chitzonius. It's an ava tluya bedovah, as the Mishnah says. It's a love which is dependent on chitzonius. When the chitzonius changes, you get used to it. The love disappears. But klali sol es vaket, it's all about pnimius. We're not looking at the chitzonius. Also, I saw a beautiful story recently, a true story, that the first names of the people involved, second names obviously. There was a boy who never drifted away for about a year and a half from Yiddishkeit. At the age of 17, he had an inspiration, and he came back. He didn't just come back, he became very strong in his learning, in his avoda, in his relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Often we find people that have come back, they're much stronger, and he was much stronger. And he excelled in everything. When he came to Shidduchim, and they offered him good Shidduchim, he had a little bit of a secret. He wasn't sure what to do about the secret. And that is, those 18 months, he had left the fold, he had become a Buddhist monk. And he had tattooed on both his arms, his back and his stomach, a picture of Mr. Buddha. Very embarrassing. He wasn't sure how to approach Shidduchim with his secrets. He always kept his shirt down in yeshiva, however hot it was, never wore short sleeves. Anyhow, he phoned one of the Gedolim of America. I remember when reading the story, he said, which God it was, what should he do? Does he have to tell the secret before he meets a girl? And the God says, no, don't tell, don't speak about it. Before you meet someone, before you propose, reveal the secret. That's what the Das Torah told him. Actually, I've had a few stories over time, and Gedolim seem to say this when it comes to Shidduchim. Square Rebbe was once here in London, and someone approached him about a similar type of Shaila. He said the same thing, although maybe I don't understand, we might not understand this Mahalach, that's what the Das Torah says. Anyhow, so he goes out with this girl, and after a few meetings, it seems to go very well, and he's terrified at the moment he's going to reveal to her this secret, and it's the final part of the meeting, she's expecting him to propose, and he says to her, I'm going to tell you something and show you something. Please don't react straight away. Give 10 minutes thought before you react. He was scared. As soon as he rolls up his sleeve, she's going to dash out of the car and run a mile. Run to the hills, as they say. So he says, please, just give it a bit of thought. So he rolls up his sleeve and he shows Buddha on his arm. Imagine what you might expect her to, how she should react to marrying someone with Buddha's tattooed on his body. And he says to her, it's not just one, I've got a few on my body. He's terrified. What's going to happen next? And she says to him with a straight face, don't be afraid. It doesn't bother me. He says, I see one tattoo on you. And that's Yud Kei Vav Kei, on your neshama. I've been with you quite a few hours. I can see your shemaim, your midas tevas, your connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He says, I don't care about these tattoos. I see the Yud Kei Vav Kei in your neshama. It's a true story. The person's called Chaim Simcha. He lives in Bnei Brak now, happily married. Gewaldige Meisa, how Ba'as, it might look restrictive in some ways, but we're looking at Pnimius and others in Shidduchim, in relationships. It's not about Chatzonius. And that makes a much more of a stronger marriage. I saw a beautiful Vart recently. It bothered me literally since I was a young child when I learned in Chumash. Ati Adati, when Avraham Avinu saw his wife's reflection in the river Nile, he said, now I know you're so beautiful, we've got a problem here on our hands. And the Medrash, which Rashi brings, implies that he never looked at his wife. But he lived with her for 70, 80 years, never looked at his wife. It really bothered me as a child, I was too afraid to ask it. Those days you weren't allowed to ask questions, you get thrown out of the class. But I remember it always bothered me, this question, well, he never looked at his wife, how does she react to that? Is it possible such a thing, he never looked at his wife? It really bothered me for many, many years. Just recently I saw Gewaldige Vort in the Sefer. It's such an embassy of Vort. Like we go to a God Ladoyer. He looks through us. He sees who we are. He's looking into our pnimius. Avraham Avinu was so great. When he looked at Sarah, Imenu, he looked at the pnimius. Her pnimius was what was important to him, and it was so boilet that the chitzonius was not important at all. He didn't notice the chitzonius. Of course he looked at her. But he looked at the pnimius, that's what counts, that's what's important. Like that girl in our story before. When he stood by the river Nile, he looks into the reflection. In a reflection, there's no pnimius. All there is to see is the chitzonius. That's the first time in his life he noticed the chitzonius and realized he had a problem. It's a beautiful pshat. It's Emma's pshat. You look at the queen, Zichron Lerochov, that's what you want to say about. Oh, but you look at her, she had four kids, I don't know how many kids she had, four, I think. You look at her success rate in her children's marriages and royal family, royal blood, plenty of money, covered. You'd think they can choose any spouse they want, everybody's happy to marry them. And look, Nebuchadnezzar, the failures of those marriages. Torah is not restrictive. The way we live our lives is protective. It's protecting us from society, from the general attitude of society. And that brings about strong marriages, a tremendous loyalty in the marriage. We're living on a different planet than the rest of the world. A planet of freedom, protected from society and not restrictive at all. I want to go into one point when it comes to the moshel to midas. The Torah requires us, for instance, not to take revenge. The Maseilas Yesharim himself writes, you think it's an English saying, it's the Maseilas Yesharim, I think it's Shaul Nekias, he writes that Nekomas Masukim Midvash, revenge is sweeter than honey. A person wants to take revenge, he desires it so much, and he feels, when I have taken my revenge, I'm going to be so happy. So happy. The Torah says don't take revenge. Again, we feel restricted. We can't take revenge. I want to take revenge so much. But the reality is, when we're free of these feelings, we have a free and enjoyable life. Just very briefly, I don't want to go into the story. I just remember a story once I read. It's a true story. Part of the story is in the papers. About two boys, Nebuch, in a tree in 1939 when the Nazis invaded Poland. They were hiding in a tree and they saw the German officer gun down their parents. They managed to survive the war. They both moved to Eretz Yisrael, to Shalaim. They both moved to Eretz Yisrael. One moved to Shalaim and got on with their life. The other one was intent on taking revenge on this Nazi officer. He was so intent. He first joined the Israeli army, went into the Mossad. And being in the Mossad, he managed to locate where this officer was located. He had become an officer in the French Legion. And when he went on a mission for the Mossad to France, he managed to desert and he joined the French Legion. And after a number of years, he managed to manipulate, become part of that regiment. And once he was on a patrol with this Nazi, and on their own, he gunned them down and came back and told them that he'd been killed by enemy fire. And he came back to Eretz Yisrael. He was arrested. That's why the story became so well known. He had deserted the army. And at the court case, he said his whole life story and they let him off. They felt and understood his emotions. And then he went after to visit his brother in Yerushalayim. His brother had, over these years, set up a household in Yerushalayim, married, had children, grandchildren. And he was there Shabbos, and he never got married. He was so busy following and trying to take revenge on this Nazi. And he said to his brother, you know, my whole life I chased this desire for revenge. I'll tell you the truth, when I shot that Nazi, I felt a tremendous, tremendous pleasure. But the second later it was gone. I thought, crazy, I spent my whole life trying to take revenge. What a waste of a life. And look at you, you moved on, you forgot, you blotted out that trauma from your brain. You got on with life, you built a family. And I look at you, I think, I'm crazy. What did I do in my life? I should have copied you. We think the midas the Torah forbids us to engage in are restrictive. I can't take, I want to take, I must take revenge. But he did such a nasty thing to me. The Torah says, don't take revenge. Forget the feelings of revenge. When a person follows the dictates of the Torah, the person finds a real freedom, an inner sense of freedom and happiness, a yeshiva das. He's not driven by bad middos. What might look restrictive is really protective and enables us to have a very special life. How do we achieve this madrega? So it's all in Chazal. Chazal is part of the Torah that teaches us how to achieve madregas where we don't allow our middos to overtake our lives. Chazal tell us, when Klal Yisrael came to Har Sinai, v'yichen shom Yisrael, v'lo shen yochid. Chazal learned from there, they came ki'ish echad b'lev echad. They came as one. It looks like from the Medrash, they could only receive the Torah because they were ba'achdus. That's what it seems from the Medrash. Why was achdus so important to enable us to receive the Torah? What does ki'ish echad mean? The Yerushalmi in the Dorim Perek Tes Halacha Dalet. Yerushalmi writes on the Pasuk Le'Sikoyim, he writes, how should we feel when someone does something bad to us? So Yerushalmi gives a moshel, which explains to us what Ki'ish Echad means. A person's chopping meat with a sharp knife. He's chopping away at the meat. The other finger, the other hand gets in the way and he chops the finger and he chops himself, he cuts himself. You won't find a person who snatches a knife from the other hand, and cuts the hand that cut him. If somebody does that, he needs to see serious help. Right? It's not what a person would do, would even think, contemplate doing. So Yerushalmi, that's what we're going to feel when it comes to others. It's a tremendous madrega. We can only try and strive for such a madrega. But that's the madrega of Ki'ish Echad. We're like one person. There shouldn't be any feelings. But how do we achieve this? How do we achieve such a level? How is it possible to achieve a level where we don't have any feelings, ill feelings towards someone else? Has done us an avla, he's made us lose money, he's embarrassed us, he's physically hurt me, mentally. How do we achieve such a thing? When Klal Yisrael left Rafidim, he says, V'yisim Rafidim. Chazal asked, they were in Rafidim. If you're going to travel to Manchester, to Gates, you don't say, I'm traveling from London. That's where we are. You're in London. So you're traveling, I'm traveling to Manchester. I'm traveling to Gates. I'm traveling to Antwerp. We don't say, what's the Yisrael Mirfidim? So Chazal tell us, just as they arrived at Har Sinai with Tshuva, so too they left Refidim with Tshuva. What Tshuva are we talking about here? The Pasuk says, they asked, Ayesh Hashem b'kirbeinu moin, is Akash Baruch amongst us or not? That's what they asked before Amalek came along. What does it mean, Ayesh Hashem b'kirbeinu? Is Akash Baruch amongst us? What, they saw the miracles of Kriyas Yamsuf. They saw that Nane covered. They saw all the miracles around them. What do you mean, Akash Baruch amongst us? What does that mean? Another question. Amalek came and made battle. Why did Klal Yisrael have to battle them physically? Why couldn't the earth open and swallow them up? Or missiles rain down from Shemayim like we find in Nach? Stones came from Shemayim. Why was there a physical battle by Amalek? With the Mitzrayim, they drowned in the Yamsuf. Why Hashem had to have a physical battle to let them conquer the Amalekim? Very important question. I remember having this question as well. As a youngster, why Hashem wants to make a miracle? Why do they have to have hand-to-hand combat with Amalek? Chazal state, the question of Yesh Shem B'Kebeinu Moyen was, of course they saw Hashem can interfere with nature. How could Hashem can fight? He could change nature. They saw that. Kriyas Yam Suf, the Makkos, the Mitzrayim, Shmurken, he's very powerful. What they weren't sure about was Hayeshem B'Kirbeinu. Can I do what I like if Akshmurken doesn't interfere? When HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't interfere, can I do what I like? Can I cause someone else pain, loss, suffering? Is Akash Baruch Hu within us? That means, is he also controlling what happens but on Mechaveiro? Was Akash Baruch Hu only in control that he can mix in? Once he created the world, we can run it ourselves, we can do what we like to others. That was their question. Now, Yesh Hashem b'kirbeinu moyen, is Akash Baruch Hu within us? Can we do what we like? Is that also controlled from Shemayim? Kadosh Baruch Hu sent Amalek. And here, there was hand-to-hand combat. Moshe would lift up his hands. V'gover Yisrael. When he put his hands down, V'gover Amalek. Says the Mishnah, V'chi yodov shal Moshe oisiz v'choma. Did the hands of Moshe make battle? I remember hearing from Atzor Sonnenzayn, Gesundten Stark, Sharafu Shlema. I remember saying, now what's the question, V'chi yodov shal Moshe oisiz v'choma? What do you mean? Moshe made his hands were magical. They could split the Yamsuf. They could bring Makkas. V'chi yodov shal Moshe oisiz v'choma. What type of question is that? Let's see what Moshe Rabbeinu's hands can do. So he said, Pshat could be his own Pshat or from Chaim Volozhin, I don't remember. But he said, the question was, of course Moshe Rabbeinu's hands can interfere with nature, can make miracles. The Chiyodov Shal Moshe Oisiz Melchoma as well. When we're battling against Amalekim, are his hands also controlling that as well? When Moshe Rabbeinu lifted up his hands, the Yidden felt a surge of power. He put down his hands, they felt the power draining out of them. And the Malekim said they had a surge of power. And they could see that Moshe Rabbeinu's hands were controlling the actions of the human being, the physical actions, how much power and strength they had. They learned a new lesson. Yesh Hashem b'kirbeinu. And it means, in very short terms, well, this is really something which needs to be discussed at length, that a person, of course, has got a bechira. That Hashem writes, everything is orchestrated from above, the koiches and the malachim. There's a high command. A little duck wants to fly from a pond to another pond, it's all controlled in Shemayim. There's one part of the universe not controlled, that's our bechira. We can choose to do good or to do bad. We've got the battle, the goof against the neshama. Two halves, we heard earlier. Two halves fighting, that's what life's about. It's a constant battle. It's the gym. The next world is a spa. Avada, we can make, we've got Bechira. But what we do to others is only if they deserve what happened to them. The Rebbe Dessler explains, if someone is supposed to get a small slap, let's say, on his face, or meant to hurt his finger, or hurt his foot, Hashpoch will be mazmin someone than the kutz of bechira, whether to hit someone or not. If he's boicha bara, the person gets what he's supposed to get. If the person's boicha b'toiv, he'll catch his finger in the door, or he'll bang into a door, or to a post. You cannot cause anguish to another person that wasn't destined for them to get. That we can't do. The person who's been boicha bara, he's going to do tshuva and ask mechila. That's his job. The way the recipient's meant to look at it, it's come from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because Yesh Hashem b'kirbeinu. When a person receives and understands this point about some Madrega, we've got to work on it, the person removes the other person from the scene and sees the Rabbeinu Shleilam. When a person sees the Rabbeinu Shleilam, we're able to overcome that desire of Leisikoyim and other Midas that are prevalent within us. That could bring us to a Madrega Kish Echad, Belev Echad. If we process what happens to us rightly. So once I had a marshal, it's all about processing what happens to us. Not what happens to us that makes the resulting feeling. It's how we process it. If a person's walking down the street, somebody gives him a bang on his back. He's about to turn around angry. He sees Nebuch. It's someone not well. That's his way of saying hello. So he smiles back. So it's not what happens to us, it's how we process it. Once the Gvaldiga Pshat from Matisol Solomon, Chazal tell us, Pshat in the Posuk, when Yosef was sold by his brothers, he's heading to Mitzrayim, into slavery. So the Posuk writes, he was in a caravan with good spices to have a comfortable journey. A person's heading into slavery. Why is he thinking about, he's not going to notice the nice smell. He's thinking about the trouble he's in and the bleak future that awaits him. So it didn't make a difference to Yosef that there was nice smelling spices around him. So Matos in the Gevaldik of Shat, Yosef was so calm that Rechaim HaKadosh writes, Peledik, he writes in Parshas by Yigash, that he loved his brothers after they sold him, just like before they sold him. There was no difference. He processed it so healthily. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sending him to Mitzrayim, like he said later to his brothers, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent me in front of you. He processed it so well and healthy. That way he enjoyed the good smelling spices. He was relaxed and calm. He wasn't agitated, nervous. He's Biyad Hashem. When the Torah tells us, whether it's the Sikoim, how to conduct ourselves, we spoke about in relationships, it's not restrictive. It might look restrictive to the outside world, but it's not restrictive. It's protective. If we follow the dictates of the Torah, we're going to have a real freedom and enjoyment in life. And that's the Hakdama Shet Sichem Eretz Mitzrayim. That's how Shmuel introduced himself to Klal Yisrael. I took you out of Mitzrayim. Torah is about freedom. As stated in Chazal, the final climax of the Yitzhiyah from Mitzrayim was Takat Matan Torah. That's the Hakdama to Torah. I'm giving you a Torah. It might look restrictive, but it's not. It's protective. And it gives a person a real freedom in life. Just speaking about this point we mentioned earlier of rising above what people do to us, there's a grounding of Maisa of Shimshon Zil. A story happened in the year Tov Kuf. He was a very sought after Rav, but he had various conditions which the killers didn't like. He would only become a Rav if he could be approached on Motzei Shabbos once a week, and only if nothing happens in town without his permission. These were difficult conditions for most killers. The town of Zivlin took him as a Rav, and they promised to keep these conditions. Because Avram brings the story, it's a true story brought in the Chosh for Sefer. So one Erev Shabbos, his wife was going to buy some fish in the market, saw a nice fish, and she started negotiating with a fisherman, and they came to an agreed price. She was about to pay for the fish when a very rich lady came along, and she said she wants the fish, she's prepared to pay more, but the Rebbetzin said, look, I already agreed a price. And she paid the fisherman double and took the fish. The Rebbe says, it's not fair. I already agreed the price of the fish. And she called her various names. And people in the market saw what happened. They're very shocked. The Rebbe had been mevuza. And they wanted to take action straight away against the family of this, against this woman. But they remembered they couldn't do anything until Motzei Shabbos. It was Tuesday. So they told the Rebbe, we're going to try and approach your husband on Motzei Shabbos and complain about the behavior. Just prime him for our complaint, for our visit. Trying that Friday night when the Rav came home from shul, she set two tables. So why two tables? What happened? You can't sit the same table as me. He says, no, I'm this, I'm that, I'm that. So why do you think you're these bad things? Says, that's why I was called in the market on Tuesday. So I can't sit the same table as the Rav. She's trying to prime him for the visit, not the Shabbos. So he said, when this happened, it happened Tuesday. So he said to her, what do you mean, since Tuesday you're bearing a grudge against someone? We're going to ask Mechila. We're going now to ask Mechila. So before Kiddush, they're going to ask Mechila. So went around to this house of this Givya, he knocks on the door. Who is it? It's up to Mr. Rav. So he's got a big shock. They found out Charot what happened, but they felt like the Rav's going to come in and give them a Mishaberach. So they open the door, and the Rav comes in, he comes to ask Mechila. He comes to Chbet Mechila. He bets Mechila Barachman. Then what's going on here? We should be asking you Mechila. You go on Shalom and Shalva. We have so many stories of Gedolim. Oh, this is Madragas. I didn't bear a grudge for a moment. So Trends of Madragas, only thing we can strive for, try and work on. I think a point we spoke out today was this Nakuda, how we're supposed to view Torah, how we should give Torah over to that way of the way of Torah, the Torah way, as it's called, to our mishpachas, to people we interact with, people we do business with, when we discuss what Torah is. The message should be, it's not restrictive, it's protective. If we understand Torah and keep it the way Chazal keep it. Have a good Shabbos. 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 Shabbos.